Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. President Donald Trump visited a megachurch in Miami on Friday. He rallied a key part of his base, evangelical Christians, claiming that he is the one to defend, quote, religion itself, which is under siege, end quote. Trump brought Sissy Graham Lynch to the stage on Friday. She's granddaughter of the late Billy Graham, founder of Christianity Today. It was a deliberate choice, as just a few weeks ago, an editorial in Christianity Today magazine called for the president's removal from office. Quote, none of the president's positives can balance the moral and political danger we face under a leader of such grossly immoral character, end quote. That is from that editorial. It shook the community and laid bare the discussions happening within churches and families about American evangelicals and their support for the president. So this hour on Point, the just retired editor of Christianity Today. And listeners, you can join us. Are you an evangelical Christian who voted for the president in 2016? What do you think of Christianity Today saying evangelical support for President Trump harms American Christianity? And if you didn't vote for the president, what do you make of the backlash against this editorial? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Well, Mark Galley joins us today from Chicago. He served as the editor-in-chief of Christianity Today for 20 years, and he wrote that editorial titled Trump Should Be Removed from Office. Mark Galley retired from the magazine on Friday, and he joins us now. Welcome to On Point.
Good to be with you, Meghna.
So first of all, for how long before the editorial was published in mid-December, how long were you thinking about writing it?
Probably about 5 or 10 minutes. And what I mean by that is we generally don't comment on the larger political scene in the United States. So I'd been thinking about should we write an editorial on the impeachment proceedings, but was not thrilled about doing it. But as I thought about some of the things the magazine had done in the past, we had written a forceful editorial on during Clinton's impeachment as well as Nixon's. Mm-hmm. And so I'm starting to think maybe we should say something. I walk in the office on Thursday morning and I talk to my editorial director and say, what do you think? Do you think we should write an editorial on the impeachment? He says, yeah, we should. So that's when I started to sit down and write the editorial. Now, if anyone's familiar with my writing, you know that I've been working really hard for the last 3 to 4 years to try to get evangelicals on the left, center, and right to talk to one another charitably, to try to listen to one another, to try to understand where each is coming from. And so I'd started the editorial by wanting to write the typical Mark Galley on the one hand, on the other, let's be charitable toward one another. And as I thought about what was at least revealed to me and to millions of other Americans during the impeachment hearings, I just said that just doesn't work anymore. That is not – we've crossed a Rubicon of some sort, and I can't say that. And then I proceeded to write what I ended up writing, which was much more forceful, direct than I had done in a lot of my editorials on this topic.
Indeed it is. And it's catalyzed an incredible variety of responses, as you know.
Exactly.
But take us through some of the arguments that you make in this editorial, because as you know, many members of the evangelical community, particularly the white evangelical community, I mean, they see the president as the most effective and powerful protector of their faith that's been in the White House for some time. So you really come out swinging against these cherished beliefs they have. I mean, you call the president profoundly immoral. Tell us why you think he's profoundly immoral.
Well, to give credit to my fellow evangelicals, their reasons, their rational reasons for supporting the president, there is something to be said there. That is to say, you know, evangelicals in general are fiercely pro-life, and the president has attempted to appoint judges that will defend that point of view. He may not be a defender of all religious freedom, but he certainly stood by Christians, at least verbally, in many instances when he feels like they're not getting a fair shake. And there's other reasons that they support him for practical policy reasons. What I think they're what they're blind to, if I can use such strong language, is they don't seem to recognize that the very demeanor of the president and the language he uses to talk about his opponents and the cavalier way in which he thinks about and talks about his moral life, they pass this off when those who have responded. Many pass it off and say, well, he's fighting for the causes we care about, and if he has a few rough edges, we can live with that. And they don't seem to recognize that a man who calls his political enemies crazy and lying and disgraced and losers and crooked and phony and fake and does this day in and day out, often many times a day, they don't seem to recognize he is exacerbating the culture of contempt, which was already well underway before he became president. I mean, Hillary Clinton called many Americans a basket of deplorables. But it's no question that President Trump has taken that to a new level. And the fact that they don't connect that with the biblical verses about holding one's tongue and how dangerous the tongue can be and how powerful words are and how we have to be guarded in our speaking, they seem to have completely made a disconnect between those things. And to call that type of language rough edges is to miss the gravity of what's going on.
You, until Friday, you were editor of Christianity Today for 20 years. Before that?
Yeah, let's be clear, just to be precise. I was managing editor for 12 or 13 of those years and editor-in-chief for the last 7 or 8.
Ah, okay. No, I appreciate that. So you were with the magazine for a total
of 20 years. Yeah, so I was in an important position editorially with the magazine for 20 years. That is correct.
Okay, and prior to that, you were a Presbyterian minister.
I actually worked for a couple other magazines, one on leadership for pastors, one on church history, and then I was a pastor for 10 years before that.
Okay. Yeah. The reason why I wanted to sort of get the a very quick bio out there for folks is because what I want to ask you is, obviously, you have been observing and, you know, living in the community, the diverse community of American evangelicals for some time. Why do you think the parts of the community have arrived at the point that you just described, that in order to support the parts of the president they believe in, they are overlooking parts of the president which you would think evangelicals normally wouldn't overlook? Why has that happened?
Well, I think there are those formal reasons that I talked about, issues on abortion, pro-life. I've been embedded in the movement, I have to say, for half a century. Mm-hmm. You know, I was a young man when I went forward during an altar call in an evangelical church when I was 13. So yeah, I've been observing the movement and living in it for half a century now. And I will say in the last 5 to 10 years, perhaps it started with Jerry Falwell's senior, The Moral Majority. There is an increasing frustration with the direction of American life. And I can identify with it. I mean, the kind of the moral and cultural standards we enjoyed as Americans for a couple centuries have been slowly eroded by various sundry forces. And there's an increasing frustration that some of the classic moral understandings that we've had about marriage, about sexuality, about prayer, about the place of religion in the public square, that's all been eroded. And it's accelerated in the last, before Trump, in the previous 8 to 10 years before that. So there is this tremendous frustration and really anger with the forces that these conservative evangelicals feel are responsible for this. And it's usually summed up in the phrase liberals or Democrats or socialists or communists.
Is there fear also? I mean, you say anger, but is there also
fear?
I
don't know about that. I mean, I've not been a big fan of the labeling people who have a strong point of view as fearful. I think that doesn't get to the heart of what's going on. They are certainly angry and upset about it. And, Yeah, I don't like to reduce our debates into psychological categories. I'd prefer to stick with what are the issues at hand that are making people frustrated and angry.
I appreciate what you just said, and I will in a moment come back to sort of the practical issues at hand as you're talking about. But I am curious about this, and you're a wonderful sort of keyhole for people who aren't members of the evangelical community to try and understand better.
Yeah.
So, and the reason why I say fear is because even last Friday when the president was in Miami speaking to a large group of evangelical Christians, a lot of the talk has been about like trying to protect their right to religion, as if there's this belief that their ability to practice evangelical Christianity in America is under threat somehow, and they fear losing those rights. That's what I'm wondering about: how much fears is driving this, and whether they see the president as someone to protect them from the possible loss of those rights.
Well, if I may broaden the conversation, okay. The reason why I'm not in favor of using the language of fear to talk about it is because on the left, there is a great deal of rhetoric that talks about what's happening with Donald Trump, what could happen with Donald Trump, what could happen if evangelicals have their way. And most of the language is one could interpret and couch in the language of fear. We're going to become a fascist dictatorship if we're not careful. And people are going to, you know, the people we care about the most in terms of their rights, they're going to lose their rights. Okay, so let's say we have people on the left and the right are fearful about what might happen or what is happening. That's fine. I get that that's part of the motivation, but it doesn't then take us anywhere. Mm. It doesn't help us then go to the next level and understand, so what is the fear rational? Is it not rational?
Right.
In what ways is it true? In what ways is it not true? And then you have to start talking about issues and the reality on the ground.
Well, hold that thought, because we will come right back with a lot more. We're talking this hour with Mark Galli. On Friday, he stepped down as editor-in-chief of Christianity Today. In a couple minutes, a little later in the show, we'll hear from another member of the American evangelical community with a very different view about the president. So we'll be right back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour with Mark Galli. He was editor-in-chief for Christianity Today, the magazine founded by Billy Graham. Mr. Galli stepped down from that position. He retired from that position, I should say, on Friday. But in the middle of last month, he wrote an editorial in Christianity Today headlined, "Trump should be removed from office." And it is an impassioned argument from the perspective of an evangelical American about his concerns regarding President Trump and, as the headline says, why he believes the president should be removed from office. And we have a link to that editorial at onpointradio.org. Mr. Galli, if I may, I just want to read a couple little excerpts from the editorial and then sort of ask you about one particular aspect of it, which really caught my eye. I mean, you write that none of the president's positives can balance the moral and political danger we face under a leader of such grossly immoral character. That's from the editorial. And then you go on to say, "To the many evangelicals who continue to support Mr. Trump in spite of his blackened moral record, we might say this: remember who you are and whom you serve. Consider how your justification of Mr. Trump influences your witness to your Lord and Savior. Consider what an unbelieving world will say if you continue to brush off Mr. Trump's immoral words and behavior in the cause of political expediency." Now, as I read this, I hear a call for you. Are you asking your fellow Christians or evangelical Christians to think about the impact that their support for the president is having on how the world sees them and the seriousness with which the world takes American evangelical Christianity?
Yes, and absolutely. And there is some anecdotal evidence that that is the case. Among the many responses we received many from people who are agnostics or atheists or on the periphery of religion. And they have said as a result, and there were hundreds of letters saying, I was ready to reject religion and I had lost all respect for evangelicals, all respect for Christianity because of the evangelicals for Trump. And now you've given me pause for thought. I'm going to think about this some more. In other words, the reputation had already tanked pretty seriously, and for a leading evangelical magazine to say what's going on is a problem, and it's a deep and serious moral problem, is deeply appreciated by a lot of people. I mean, it's not just that people agree. A typical letter is thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, with 20 exclamation points. So that's a reaction to the fact that people have been extremely disappointed and have begun to denigrate evangelicalism as a mere political movement. I was talking to a host of a podcast last night, and he said, yeah, he's an agnostic Jew. He said, yeah, you're right. There's something funny about this. Even though I'm an agnostic Jew, when I see a devout Catholic or a devout evangelical do something that's a denial of their religion, I'm really disappointed. So I think there's a reality there that I don't think my evangelical brothers and sisters are quite cognizant of, or if they are, they chalk it up to people are just they don't get it, and they're just persecuting us now for our support of pro-life or whatever they happen to think the cause is.
So tell me, what do you think the cost might be, the long-term cost might be of evangelical support for the president?
Well, I think it's the cost that has already taken place. I think the word evangelical, which is a very good word in terms of its richness, its theological richness, and its history, has been quite it's a wonderful tradition. Evangelicals were some of the leading abolitionists. You go to a garbage dump in Cairo, and you find people living there, and then you find a Christian ministry there. You know, the anecdote that I say is if you walk into those doors, you're going to find out it was either founded by Catholic nuns or evangelicals. I mean, that's the type of people evangelicalism can produce. But that word is shot now. It is merely a synonym for conservative religious politics, as epitomized by the Friday rally in Miami, evangelicals for Trump, not evangelicals for Jesus, not evangelicals for the loss, not evangelicals for those caught in sexual slavery, evangelicals for Trump. It's just the word itself, which is supposed to be talking about good news of the gospel, that Christ has come to save us, forgive us, and give us new life. That's all just completely gone and lost. So we have lost that. And unless Christians continue to speak up it's a cliche. I recognize when I wrote it, it was a cliche. Unless we call a spade, and actually just say when we see something immoral taking place in our culture, unethical, something deeply troubling, we don't have to have all the solutions for that. You know, there's some very wise people in Washington who are working out the political details of all this. But as Christians, the least we can do is say, this is wrong. This is a problem. This is dangerous for our country, for our culture, for the people we call friends that live next to us. If we're supposed to love our neighbor as ourselves, then when something of this stature happens in our country, the least we can do is say, it's a problem, and somehow we have to address it.
Hmm. Well, in a couple of minutes, we're going to hear from the executive editor of another evangelical magazine here. But Mr. Galley, you've received a lot of response, some in support, and quite a bit of pushback as well to the editorial. I mean, amongst them, perhaps chiefly amongst them, Franklin Graham, son of Billy Graham. And of course, Billy Graham founded Christianity Today. Franklin Graham, in response to your editorial, ended up putting out some statements saying that his father had voted for President Trump. Then he went on Fox News, this is Franklin Graham, on Christmas, actually, to denounce your editorial. And here's what he said.
this left-leaning magazine that my father did start 60 years ago, but is so far removed now from what my father founded the magazine to be. Mm. It is something totally different. And for them to say that the president should be removed when he's done more for Christians and evangelicals than any president in my lifetime, I just find it crazy. Mm. The man's just lost his mind.
Franklin Graham on Fox News.
Okay.
Have you lost your mind?
I may have. Who knows? My wife thinks that every once in a while. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. It is true that he said in one of his tweets that we haven't had a close connection with the Graham Association for 20 years, although we had a board member up until the last few years who was a part of the Graham Association. But we haven't had a close association with them. That he's correct in that. But the fact that nobody who reads the magazine would consider us left-leaning. We are definitely centrist, center-right, maybe center-left sometimes. That's just crazy talk. And the fact that he would say we're far from the original intention of his father. Now, I don't know if his father would agree or not agree. I'm not here to debate that. I don't know if his father voted for Trump or not. Who knows? But in the original charter of the magazine, Billy Graham wanted, and it's something we take seriously to this day, I should say the magazine does, I'm not a we anymore, we should bring to bear, Christianity Today should bring to bear the insights, the theology, the biblical understanding of Christianity to bear on the social and political issues of our day. That's one of the things we're supposed to try to do. And that's what we've tried to do when we wrote an editorial saying that Clinton was unfit morally for the presidency, calling for Nixon's resignation. We don't pop into politics every day. Only when the gravity of the situation calls for us to do something, when it's an extraordinary situation, the magazine does that. I felt on December 19th, that was one of those moments. But yeah, we're supposed to speak into the issues of our day. And sometimes that will make it sound like we're doing politics. I don't deny that the timing of the piece, people consider it political, but a careful reader will understand it was fundamentally a moral argument.
Mm. Well, Mr. Galley, if you'll stand by for just a moment, we really want to sort of reflect as best that we can the conversation of differing views that's happening.
I think it's great you're having Richard Land on. That's wonderful.
So let me just introduce him now into the conversation. Richard Land joins us from Charlotte, North Carolina. He's executive editor of The Christian Post. And Richard Land, along with his co-author, Christian Post senior managing editor John Grano, they wrote an editorial piece headlined Christianity Today and the Problem with Christian Elitism. So, Richard Land, welcome to On Point.
Well, thank you. It's good to be with you. I appreciate it. Let me just at the very outset make it very clear that the Christian Post editorial policy is not endorsing President Trump. In fact, if you read the column, it's not exactly an endorsement of President Trump when you say that for many evangelicals, he was the lesser of two evils. At the very least, the lesser of two evils, and that many evangelicals felt that in policies he's done better than many of us had thought he would. I mean, I've said publicly on numerous occasions that he was my last choice in the primaries. Last of 18, he was last. So I just want to make that very clear that when I'm talking to you today, I'm talking to you as Richard Land, and I'm president of Southern Evangelical Seminary. And the Christian Post has not endorsed President Trump, and we're going to call the shots as we see them, and try to allow other views as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate that you also added the fact that you're president of the Southern Evangelical Seminary and Bible College. I was about to say that, but again, I want to thank you so much for joining us. But tell us what your primary concern with Mr. Galley's editorial was. I mean, this idea of Christian elitism, what were you trying to get at?
Well, I was quoting him. He described himself as a, quote, elite evangelical. And he said, this class of evangelicals has discovered that we have family members so different, they seem to like aliens in our midst. These other evangelicals often haven't finished college. I have a PhD from Oxford. And they have jobs. And if they have jobs, apparently many of them don't, their blue-collar jobs or entry-level work, they don't write books or give speeches. They don't attend conferences or of evangelicals for social justice or evangelicals for immigration reform. They are deeply suspicious of mainstream media. A lot of them voted for Donald Trump. I feel like that Mark's column comes out of that spirit of these evangelicals really understand, and the ones who don't just don't understand. They don't get it. I think that there's room for I helped write an editorial that was done by the editorial staff of CP at during the 2016 general election. And we said that we understood people who were never Trumpers. Some of the people on our editorial board didn't vote for Trump. Mr. Grano didn't vote for Trump. I did. I did so. I did with less. I've cast my vote with less joy than I ever have in 2016. But the idea that evangelicals are have gone deaf, dumb, and blind to Mr. Trump's faults, I think is overplayed and false.
Well, Mr. Land, so to the point that Mr. Galley was saying earlier about his concern about the impact that that he sees that the word, just even the very word evangelical now is so closely aligned with President Trump specifically, that he sees that having a long-term negative impact on what American evangelicalism is. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that that Mrs. Clinton as president would have had a long-term impact on religious freedom. It would have had a long-term impact on unborn neighbors who are being – the leading cause of death in America every day is abortion. And there are many, many, many evangelicals that find that to be a profound moral evil. And this president has proven to be the most pro-life president in terms of policy of any president in the modern era, not just in judges but in policies. He's also been a very strong defender of religious freedom both here and overseas. Pompeo, Secretary of State Pompeo, who is an evangelical, I think the first evangelical Secretary of State since William Jennings Bryan a century ago, has put numerous initiatives on the table that have profoundly impacted the cause of religious freedom around the world, for Muslims, for Christians, for Hindus, all around the world. I was at a meeting that he had at the State Department. It was the largest gathering ever for religious freedom in the State Department, in the history of the State Department. So the president has done many things that evangelicals find very gratifying, and they feel are important to the country. You know, when you've got people like Beto O'Rourke saying that he wants to take away the tax exemption of any church that does not affirm homosexual LGBTQ behavior, doesn't affirm it, many of us feel like that our ability to live our lives and to live out our faith is under assault, and that there are people who would seek to weaponize our own government against us, and we take that seriously.
Well, I wonder, I'm thinking about religious freedom and this administration regarding Muslims. I wonder what Muslims in India and China would be saying right now about that, because I'm certain that there are
tens of millions of
them who don't necessarily feel like they're freely able to practice their religion.
They aren't. And the Secretary of State and this administration have strongly protested the treatment of Muslims in China. And it's very interesting that many Muslim countries around the world aren't, but this country, America, is, and is strongly pressing the Chinese for their human rights violations against the Uyghurs in China. I served on the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom from 2001 to 2012, and I can tell you that this president has been more robust, and his administration has been more robust under Secretary of State Pompeo in defending the religious liberty of all people than any administration under which I served, both Bush and Obama.
Well, let me turn back to Mr. Galley here and just sort of refocus on Mr. Land's criticism of or concerns with your editorial, Mark Galley. Specifically, I mean, he's saying that you're just quite frankly coming from an elitist perspective. What's your response to that?
Yeah, unfortunately, the people who are using that charge actually haven't read the essay in which that comes up. It actually comes up in one or two editorials as well as an essay I wrote in a book.
I have read
And a careful reading of it will show a couple things. One is I'm using the word elite in two senses. One is factual. That is to say, the people who are the most strongly evangelicals, who are the strongest opponents of Trump and are completely mystified about evangelicals who vote for Trump, tend to be leaders of mainstream establishment evangelical organizations, Christianity Today, World Vision, World Relief, InterVarsity Press, and so on and so forth. So we are literally leaders in that. And the second sense in which I meant to imply is that we are subject to the temptation of elitism. I mean, I grant that. The stats about the Trump voters, I now regret in the sense that that was the initial findings of Trump voters, or that's a large section of them. But I certainly wouldn't include Richard Land in that group. I wouldn't include James Dobson in that group.
Mark Kelly, if you hold on for just a second, I've got to take a quick break in 10 seconds here. I'll let you pick up that thought when we come back. We're talking with Mark Kelly and Richard Land this hour. We'll be right back. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour with Mark Kelly. He just stepped down as editor, or retired, I should say, as editor-in-chief of Christianity Today. He retired from that position on Friday, and he's the author of an editorial that appeared in Christianity Today in mid-December, headlined, "Trump Should Be Removed from Office." It caused some real waves in the American evangelical community, and we have a link to that at onpointradio.org. Richard Land also joins us. He's executive editor of The Christian Post and also the president of the Southern Evangelical Seminary and Bible College. He co-authored an editorial in The Christian Post titled "Christianity Today and the Problem with Christian Elitism," and we have an excerpt of that at onpointradio.org as well. And Mr. Kelly, I just want to read a little bit more from Richard Land's editorial responding to you here, and because we were talking on this issue of elitism, because Mr. Land and his co-author, Mr. Grano, they talk about the dangers as they see of, the national security or manipulation of the national security and law enforcement apparatus behind the scenes and efforts to, quote, depose a duly elected sitting president, all while declaring arrogantly to the American people that it is for their own good. And then he says, or they write, "These are the fellow travelers that Christianity Today is clearly aligning itself with at this critical juncture in our nation's history." What's your response to that?
Well, you said I would have an opportunity to finish my last point.
Sure.
So I'm going to take advantage of that.
Okay.
And just finish it off by saying what I was criticizing my fellow evangelicals who are in positions of leadership, including myself, was looking down our noses at this particular group of Trump supporters, and I was calling us to spend more time trying to understand who they are and what drives them. And I was encouraging people to read books like Arlie Russell, Hochschild, Strangers in Their Own Land, Jonathan Haidt's The Righteous Mind. So that's the context of the elite comment. And early studies from the election showed that this group of people was, in fact, a large voting bloc. But since that time, it's become clear that some very highly educated and powerful people, like Richard Land, are also supporters. And so to the degree that there are those people, now that editorial doesn't apply to that. I'm not calling them blue-collar, uneducated, but there are people that are that way. So that's what I was driving at in that point. And I feel it's a little mischaracterization to say that somehow I'm proud of the fact that we have been looking down our nose. I've been trying to, for anyone who's been reading my writing knows, for 3.5 years, I've been desperately trying to help evangelicals left and right better understand one another. Mm. But this editorial is different. I took a different approach. And I will grant that at this point. So what was your original question?
I'll get back to that question in a second. But Mr. Land, I was just going to say, you're free to respond to him. But I do want to let me just ask you directly. Well, I mean, do you think that Christianity Today or Mark Galli is sort of aligning itself with some kind of deep state conspiracy against the president?
No, I think they're just unwittingly being duped by them. But let me also point out, I've been a Christianity Today subscriber for ever since Carl Henry. Who was a hero of mine back when I was an undergraduate at Princeton. I was reading Christianity Today every time it came out. Still do. I'm still a subscriber. Plan to remain a subscriber. I think that Mark and the quote elite groups that he was talking about, they travel in narrower circles than I do. I've been an interim pastor of 18 churches. I talk with the folks out in the pews a lot, who have these concerns and who, I'm a Southern Baptist, and most of the Southern, 82% actually of white Southern Baptists voted for Donald Trump, but they weren't really voting. Most of them were not voting for Donald Trump. They were voting against Hillary Clinton, who they saw as an existential threat. She was saying things like people must be compelled to change their views on LGBTQ issues. That one of her spiritual advisors said that abortion was sacrosanct for her. Well, you know, when you're using that kind of language and you're talking to people who have deep faith commitments, they have an obligation and a responsibility to deliver children who are being killed and who are being put to death. I mean, you know, the leading cause of death in America every day is abortion. And that is something I think about every day. I pray about every day. I pray that God will not judge my country more harshly than he has for the evil of the child sacrifice of abortion. I mean, let's talk Turkey here. The Democratic Party at this point in its history and its platform has never met an abortion they couldn't live with.
Well, Mr. Land, every time
an abortion takes place, a baby dies.
So, with all due respect for the very complex issue of abortion, I want to keep this conversation rooted in the question of American evangelicals and President Trump. Because when you talked about, and I will get the callers, I know you're waiting, and I will get to you, I promise. But Mr. Land, when you're talking about sort of the intensity of language being used, I mean, how should evangelicals or non-evangelicals respond to language such as when, you know, Rick Perry, former energy secretary, when he says about the president that he is the one chosen by God? That, too, is pretty intense language that literally the God put him in the White House.
Yeah. Well, look, Rick Perry can answer for himself. I'm not going to say that. First of all, I'm not a Calvinist, so I don't believe that everything that happens is God's will. You heard about the Calvinist who fell down three flights of stairs. He said, "Man, I'm glad that's over." I'm not that deterministic. I think that we have choices. I think given the binary choice that we were given in 2016, and given the binary choice that it looks like we're going to be given in 2020, based upon the Democratic primary so far, I think most evangelicals, at the very least, will look upon Mr. Trump as the lesser evil. That doesn't mean that I like his language. That doesn't mean that I like his style. That doesn't mean that I like a lot of the aspects of what he does or what he has done. But our history is replete with people who did very great things and very moral things, who in many parts of their character were immoral. Mm. I mean, we start with Thomas Jefferson. It's hard to imagine the American Republic without Thomas Jefferson. And yet his moral character left a lot to be desired. Lyndon Johnson, in my own lifetime, Lyndon Johnson in many ways was an odious man. He was a sexual predator in the White House and before the White House. And yet I shudder to think how he would have gotten through the 1960s without a lot more bloodshed had it not been for his courageous leadership on civil rights.
Mm. Well, you know what? I want to be able to save at least some time for a lot of our callers who've been hanging here on the line for about 50 minutes here. So Richard Land and Mark Galli, hang on here. Let's go to Tyler, who's calling from Dallas, Texas. Tyler, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I would just like to say to Mr. Galli that I really respect you and I appreciate your input, and I respect your heart for representing evangelicalism to the wider world, because the heart of Christianity really is love and grace. It's that God loves people, that he sent Jesus to die for sin, that he offers eternal life to whoever would believe in him. I mean, that's the heart. But I also agree with your concerns that when the rest of the world looks at us, they see us aligning with Trump, and then they begin to wonder if we really believe what we say. But what I want listeners to kind of understand, I'm a theology student. I've been in ministry for several years, and I did vote for Trump. And I just want people to understand that it's more complex than just than supporting everything about a person. You know, so we can disagree with the character of a person. We can point out their moral failures, but still agree with certain policies that really do benefit. And I think that Mr. Land has done a good job of simply pointing out some of the policies that have benefited us.
Tyler, so, if I could just jump in here for a second, and then I want to get Mark Galli to respond to you. But is there any point at which, theoretically, the combined weight of moral failures can outweigh the benefits of the policy?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's possible, but it's also important to realize that we don't vote for personalities, we vote for policies. So I didn't elect President Trump because of who he is as a person, but because of the policies that he advocated. And I don't expect my president to be a moral leader. That's what I look to the Bible for. So.
Really? Okay. Tyler, thank you so much for your call. Mark Galli, would you like to respond to him?
I had something really profound to say at the beginning, and it's lost. So it'll come back if it's really that important. But in terms of the idea that, now I remember what it was. In a sense, questioning or critiquing evangelicals who support Trump, I'm not questioning their political decision, their pragmatic political decision. So I understand that in some cases, it's a hard thing to do to have to vote for one person or another, and you might want to vote for Trump in those circumstances. What frustrates me is that the leaders of the evangelicals for Trump, almost to a man, have refused to condemn his deplorable denigrating and contempt for his enemies. They have just given him a pass on that. Now, maybe Mr. Land hasn't done that, and I appreciate that if he hasn't done that. But I just don't see or hear evangelicals for Trump really hold his feet to the fire when he does things that are, frankly, publicly dangerous. And what I mean by that is he is exasperating this culture of contempt. He is helping cement that in terms of our cultural personality. And what we don't realize is that will come back to bite us. If he holds in contempt his enemies now and is basically discipling the rest of us to do the same, what do you think is going to happen once he leaves office? Do you think and another party comes into place? Do you think they're going to stop being contemptuous of others? No, I think they're just going to accelerate it. And I think some of that acceleration will be a contempt of Christians as Christians, and it will be a contempt of the unborn as the unborn. I think his moral bearing and the words he uses is not just something you can put off to the side. I think that's central to what he's actually doing as a leader of the United States of America. And it's disastrous for not just for America. I think it's a disaster for evangelical faith.
And Richard Lane, I know you're going to want to respond to that, but I've got to just keep a little room here for our callers. So I'll give you a chance in a second. But let's go to Ellen, who's calling from Atlanta, Georgia. Ellen, you're on the air.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. I started with one point, but actually, having heard Mr. Land, I'd also like to say one thing more. First of all, I'm very grateful. I am a white Christian. I would call myself a former evangelical, not so much that my heart has changed, but just that because evangelical has seemed to become like more of a political thing rather than a spiritual thing. That's really been disturbing for me. And so to the editor in chief of the Christianity Today, I was just so heartened when I saw your piece because I just thought it was beautifully written and beautifully articulated. And I like Tyler have just thought, you know, like being a Christ follower is about love and grace. And it's just really bothered me to see the day in, day out bullying on the tweets, bullying and just like whatever venue or whatever environment Trump is in, whether it's a rally or tweets or whatever. And it's the day in, day out bullying that is just the opposite of who we're supposed to be in the Christian faith. Mm. And Mr. Land and Dr. Land, I know you've got a PhD. I want to be respectful of that. I understand, like, I get it. Your intentions are really good. I just hope that, you know, I've got some young adult kids that were raised in an evangelical church. And there are just some huge consequences that I think if you want to vote for Trump, vote for him. I did not because of my concerns about his bullying. But if you want to vote for him and support him politically, that, you know, do that. I get where you're coming from on that. But unfortunately, I want to reiterate what what you said. I think Mr. Galley, if mm-hmm. I got your name right. Unfortunately, I don't hear any evangelical Christians coming out publicly and denouncing any of the bullying behavior, any of the dangerous behavior, any of the contempt. And so I'm afraid that what's happening, rather than it being seen as, okay, I'm voting for somebody that I don't like, it's seen if we come out as a Christian and say anything against Trump, then there's a huge backlash. Right.
Ellen, you're going to have to forgive me for jumping in on you here. I'm so sorry, but I'm just looking at the clock and I'm fast running down on time, and you've given us a lot to respond to. So Ellen, thank you so much for that call. And obviously, Mr. Land, go ahead. I mean, what do you think about what Ellen's saying?
Well, first of all, let me just drop back a bit and say, you know, the moral majority was started as a defensive. It was defensive. Most of evangelical involvement in public policy and in politics for the last 40 years has been defensive. It has been attempting to defend against attacks on what Mr. Galley talked about earlier, what Mark talked about earlier, as the moral consensus in this country until the 1970s. And they have sought to fight back against it and to try to hold the line for religious freedom, for what they believe should be the morality and their right to live their morality without being called bigots and without being attacked, and not having their tax money used to support those things which they find heinous, like abortion. I think that and the idea that Mr. Trump is feeding a society of contempt or a culture of contempt. Let's see. It was Hillary Clinton that talked about a basket of deplorables. It was Mr. Obama who talked about people who clung to their guns and their Bibles. The attitude of contempt didn't start with Mr. Trump, and there are many of us who have publicly separated ourselves from many of his language, and I've said that his tweet needs an editor and a clutch. And also, I don't want to betray confidences here, but I think it's erroneous to assume that many evangelical leaders who have close access to Mr. Trump have not privately remonstrated with him about many, many things.
You know, I've got 45 seconds left here, and I want to give Mr. Galley the last word here today. So do you see, what are you going to do next, Mr. Galley? And do you see this as an essential ongoing conversation in American evangelicals?
I do. I think it's an important conversation. I'm grateful that Dr. Land was willing to come on the show. I appreciated his point of view. I just would say, in summary, I do agree with a lot of the moral concerns of the evangelical right, obviously. But I don't know that the way to champion those concerns is to champion a man who is perceived as a strong man and who's going to kick butt and get things right again, which is the way many evangelical Christians talk about him. I think there are better ways to promote Christian values than that.
Well, Mark Galley and Richard Land, thank you both so much for joining us today. And we have links to both their editorials at onpointradio.org. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.